Hello everyone, we are doing a reboot of Makos today. And so I'm going to tape to record a review of Maseches Makos because I think it didn't make it on the recording the last time. So Makos is a short Masechta of three prakim, which should have made it at the very end of Seder Nezikin, according to the rule we said that the Masechtas go proceed in the order of the size of the Masechta. But there is a separate reason why Makos is between Sanhedrin and Shavuos, is because Makos is really, the Gemara itself says so, is like a continuation of the end of Sanhedrin. Okay, but really only according to the way the Yerushalmi has Sanhedrin. In the Yerushalmi, the 10th and 11th chapters are flipped, so that the end of the 10th chapter moves right along into the element of Edom Zomamim, which is the beginning of Makos, which is the witnesses who are found to have perjured themselves. And so that's only if the 10th chapter of Sanhedrin ends that Masechta. It seems more appropriate that the way the Bavli has it, that the 11th chapter, which is known as Perek Chelek, which is Kol Yisrael Yesh Lam Chelek LaOlam Haba, that every Jew has a share in the afterlife. Every Jew has an automatic life after death, unless they do something to forfeit that. And that's really what the first 15 pages of that parak is all about, of how you lose your Olam Haba. Right? Everyone else gets it. Okay, but be it as it may, it makes sense for Sanhedrin, with Prokin just before, to discuss the different ways that the courts commit themselves to fulfill the death penalties. And then it makes sense after all that, even if the courts take the life of someone, the person still has Olam Haba. All right, but to interrupt three of the four death penalties and then talk about Olam Haba and then have a fourth of the death penalties afterwards, the way the Yerushalmi has it, doesn't seem to make sense. But however you look at it, the Makos does flow from Sanhedrin. Okay, so Sanhedrin basically refers to the more harsh penalties. Of course, and if you go to Kachem, Maseches Krisos discusses the kares offenses, where it's only a punishment from God, not a punishment from man. Man punishes with the death penalty, and Makos, which is punishments for violating not capital violations, but violations that have lesser punishments, which is Makos, which is 39 stripes. So the first chapter talks about the continuation of Sanhedrin, which is the laws of the Edom Zomamim. Now, it's important to note the difference between Edom Zomamim and Edus Mukheshes, or Edus Sheker, where if we want to prove that these witnesses are liars, it can't just be that we disagree with them or we contradict them. Why should we believe the contradictory witnesses more than the original witnesses? What the Torah requires for Edim Zomim is that the original two Edim are now the object of new testimony. Not that they're not attacking the testimony, they're attacking the witnesses. How? By saying you couldn't have seen what you purport to have witnessed because you were with us in a different place at the exact time. Obviously, testimony has to be timed, right? It can't be a day or two off, because then they can say, yeah, you're right, we were with you on Monday, but what we testified to was on Wednesday, right? Okay, so obviously with quick transportation, some of these things may have to be reevaluated, but be that as it may, the original witnesses become the object of new testimony. We, to the two new witnesses, say we testify that those two witnesses were with us at the time they say they saw this murder. Okay, and the punishment is that whatever they wanted to punish a person through their testimony, whatever it may be, with a monetary loss, with a physical loss, then they lose the same thing. Okay? So the Gemara, the first parak, talks about all the intricacies of Edom Zalmim, some of the very profound differences between Torah Shebaal Peh, those who accept Torah Shebaal Peh and those who don't, in how to promulgate the justice of Edom Zalmim, and more tangents about things that that relate and are tangential to testimony for these kind of cases. Second chapter is called Eluhin HaGolin, which is the punishment for taking a life inadvertently. I use that word specifically. We should not say that the punishment for taking a life by accident is that the person must attend to a city of refuge, because the Torah forgives us for accidents. We are not responsible for accidents. And the definition of an accident is an unavoidable situation. No one else on earth, given the same situation, would have had any different response or any different situation attaining to them. Therefore, if the Torah forgives accidents, it doesn't necessarily forgive mistakes. Mistakes are avoidable, right? So that's called, if someone takes a life inadvertently, then the person has to stay in the city of refuge until the Kohen Gadol dies. That can be the Kohen Gadol could be the Kohen Moshuach Nechama. There are different types of Kohen Gadols. There's a Kohen Gadol who announces at battle, who just got married, who just planted the vineyard, who just built the house, who just got engaged, and all the kind of tangents to that, and who's afraid. And it's a Kohen Gadol who makes that announcement. His death will also free the person from an imiklut. So if someone takes a life, we look for four different criteria. Did he kill with intent? In which case, that's murder. Did he kill by accident? In which case, it's forgiven. He may have nightmares about it. He may have want to do tshuva for whatever happened. And even if he's a Kohen, he doesn't duchen because he doesn't have the frame of mind. He has a conscience. He knows he took a life. That's a serious thing. If he killed with negligence, so that person does not get the benefit of the city of refuge. Right? He's open season to the family members. The famous machlokes between Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva over whether the family members have the obligation to kill him if he doesn't go to the city of refuge, or in this case, the depraved negligence of a person who took a life. So he has to always be on the run, right? And whether everyone else has the permission or the family members have the permission and everybody else has the shouldn't, right? Okay, that's the second chapter. The third chapter is called Elohim Alokin, which is really what the topic of the Masechta is about, which is what we do to people who violate a negative commandment, right? And the criteria for those punishments. So small Masechta, so everything moves very quickly in Maseches Makos. It's only on the mitzvahs lo sasei, only two mitzvahs sasei, positive commandments that have punishments. It's not bringing the Korban Pesach and not doing the Bris Milah. So, and not having a Bris Milah done on oneself. Obviously, when we're 8 days old, it's not us doing it. But if the parent didn't do it and the child gets older and doesn't take care of that, then it's the child who will be punished. All right, so then it talks about the criteria for the 39 lashes. And it's not left off the 39, but a multiple of three. And the person is evaluated how many lashes they can take for this. And usually, these are very rarely promulgated, because all a person has to do to avoid it is to say when warned, oh, I didn't realize. Okay, just say that. Okay, I didn't realize I'm a Nazir and I was drinking wine. I didn't realize it was unkosher. I didn't realize that I'm eating milk and a cheeseburger. Right? Okay, so the end of Makos has a considerable amount of Agadah about many, many disparate things, about certain philosophical notions that Moshe set up in the Torah that other prophets came, not to change, but to tweak and to reassess based on a different situation. Not mitzvahs chas v'shalom, but certain philosophical notions, but reward and punishment and the like. And Maseches Makos, the very end, very famous story about Rabbi Akiva, who gained consolation even though seeing the other desolation of the Har HaBayis, of the Temple Mount. He gained consolation with the hopes that now that it's gotten as bad as it can get, now we can bottom out, and now it'll get as good as it can get. It'll get better. That ends Maseches Makos, and the other rabbi said, "You consoled us. You consoled us, Nechamtanu." And it ends with those two prophets, Uriah, who had a negative prophecy about Yerushalayim, based on something Yirmiyahu said and something Micha said, and Zechariah, who has the very positive prophecy about Yerushalayim, which is that in the future, old men and old women will walk on their canes in the street late at night, and children will be playing in the streets without a care in the world. And it's an element of yeshuv, of people living in the opposite of desolation, of a fox running around. So when Rabbi Akiva saw that it's gotten as bad as it can get, then he knew that we're on our way to where it can be as good as it can get. And there's archaeological evidence that the third temple was started to be rebuilt in his day, but it was short-lived. It didn't pan out. But be that as it may, that is the end of Maseches Makos. Okay, that will close out for us. We Seder Nezikin. We had to make up Makos for a lost day in the past. But that'll do it for us. And I wish everybody a good day. I call the Seder, and stay safe, stay healthy, everybody. Be well.